So Sir Kim Darroch, who was formerly our UK ambassador to the United States, has sensationally quit as a row over leaked emails in which he was critical of Donald Trump's administration has escalated. So look, basically, this is the guy, Sir Kim Darroch. He was born in a council flat in the Durham area, done rather well for himself in life. He was our ambassador to the United States, living in Washington. And in a nutshell, there were some leaked audio and written transcripts as well, in which he's basically said that Donald Trump was insecure, his regime was inept, that they were incompetent, and that they were never going to improve anytime soon. So Donald Trump, to show that he isn't inept, incompetent, or in any way insecure, immediately took to Twitter to vent his frustration, saying that that Sir Kim Darroch was not well thought of in Washington and they were never going to deal with him again. So what happens is Theresa May goes, well, he's got my full backing, of course, but, you know, she would say that, wouldn't she? And they had this leadership debate, the Tory party leadership debate between Boris Johnson and Jeremy Hunt. And during that process, Jeremy Hunt had actually, just before he'd gone on air, tweeted Donald Trump back and said, hey, look, I don't think this is right what you're doing here. This is bang out of order. Boris, conspicuously quiet, refused to give Sir Kim Darroch his backing. Now, this is interesting because off the back of that, apparently Sir Kim Darroch was watching this. He's gone, right, well, look, Boris is probably going to win the Tory leadership contest. He's probably going to be the next Prime Minister. And he doesn't really want to deal with me. So he's quit. So he's walked out. He's marched off, right? And this has opened the door now for various people to maybe scuttle on in and become our next UK ambassador to the United States. Do you know who the two favourites are, Rich?
Oh, I don't. Go on.
Nigel Farage.
Okay.
He's bezzy mates with Donald Trump. So I used to share an office with Nigel Farage, different floors, and we were doing different things. But he was in there a lot. And I was there when he went over to America to meet Donald Trump. And he basically met him, got up into his gold-plated mansion. There is a story there, which is that basically Donald Trump didn't really know that they were coming,
right?
And didn't really want to let them up. And all these pictures of them just stood, you know, and it makes it look like they've gone round for dinner. They didn't. They stood outside his front door and took a few pictures and then left. Anyway, though, Nigel Farage was back in America about a good year and a bit ago. Happened to be in the same restaurant as Donald Trump. Donald Trump calls him over. Goes, come on, Nigel, you're a great guy. You're a really great guy. And took him over. They had dinner together. They do genuinely get on very well, though. So, look, wouldn't be a bad thing. We need a Brexit trade deal, post-Brexit trade deal, I should say. It's always going to be a good thing. In this ever-changing world where you've got China trying to strong-arm everyone, Russia led by Putin, you know, and just whatever is going on in Europe, South America's an absolute mess. It will be quite nice to have one powerful ally, wouldn't it? And America is that. The other bloke who's in the running for it, you ready?
Go on.
George Osborne, the current editor of the London Evening Standard. Six jobs, George, we call him because of, well, he's got several jobs. Former Chancellor of the Exchequer, of course, David Cameron's best mate. He is somebody who is obviously very well regarded on the world scene, on the international stage, and politically. You know, whatever you want to say about George Osborne, he is obviously a very intelligent chap and has done very well for himself. And again, he will be seen as somebody who could potentially be a credible candidate. I imagine that anyone who's ever invested in the London Evening Standard has really got their fingers crossed now to hope that he leaves and goes to the US, because that paper has gone downhill.
Who's your vote for?
Well, I never thought I'd really say this, but I think Nigel Farage, like, this was one of these things where, like, you got to understand who and what Donald Trump is. Like, you know, he's a bloke who obviously has got something of the child about him, which is like, you know, if you annoy him, then he's not going to invite you to his birthday party. You know, wait, just why not just give him his mate there? Just go on, Nigel, you get on with him, don't you? It can't hurt, can it?
Purely for that reason, to appease...
Yeah, because Donald Trump is basically this kind of guy that if he likes you, he'll throw everything at you. Oh, yeah, come on, have this, have that. And we might as well just do that. We might as well capitalise on that. We do have an asset as a nation here that very few other countries have. That, again, I can't really believe I'm saying this, that being Nigel Farage, right? Because he actually is mates with the US president. He's got an existing relationship with him. He gets him. And that, in this case, could be good for Britain. It would be ironic, wouldn't it, if the best way that Nigel Farage could serve this country was by flying over the Atlantic and staying there.
And just being Donald Trump's friend.
Yeah.
Do you think they're that tight? Do you think they text each other?
I don't know if they text each other, but I think they. I know that they've slid into each other's DMs on occasion.
Is that right? I believe we have someone on the line who's going to give us their take on a lot of this.
Yes, Greg Swenson, who is a partner at Brig McAdam and spokesperson for Republicans Overseas. So obviously Donald Trump is a big Republican. Greg, it's great to have you on the show. Cheers for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. Nice to be here.
Brilliant. Okay, so look, obviously our UK ambassador to Washington now, Sir Kim Darroch, has resigned. It followed the fact that he, I think, unfortunately for him, he had some leaked emails that showed that he'd called Donald Trump inept, incompetent, that his regime was never going to look credible. Basically, he said some quite unflattering things about him. Is this a good thing, then, that our ambassador or former ambassador has resigned?
Well, I don't think it's a good thing. I mean, this is one of those situations where, you know, to some degree, everybody loses. You know, everybody looks bad here. And so it's a shame about the way it happened, you know, with this leak. And it's a shame that, you know, that the ambassador who, you know, in some ways was just doing his job and being honest and, you know, writing in what was supposed to be an internal memo. You know, it's a shame that that happened. However, it also sort of proves the natural attitude from the left, from the progressive left, from the sort of permanent civil servant state apparatus, from consistent with mainstream media and academia. You know, the dislike for not just this president, but also his voters. You know, this, in many ways, to me, this was kind of that Hillary moment when she called the Trump voters deplorables. You know, it just sort of demonstrates a certain amount of snobbery the so-called elite, and that's exactly what this movement was about. It wasn't really a Trump movement; it was an anti-establishment or an anti-elite movement.
I get that, but it can't be a great look for Americans to see their president regularly just taking to Twitter to say some very, very strongly worded stuff about people.
Yeah.
Do you wish he didn't do that?
Yeah, of course. I mean, there's a lot of us, you know, a lot of conservatives who sort of frown on that. But we also have learned that that's just the way he is. I mean, he's a street fighter from Queens. You know, he's not a diplomatic person. That's not his style. Mm. You know, it's one of the reasons he got elected, but it's also one of the reasons where a lot of people on the right, not just the left, but a lot of people on the right were skeptical of him. But what's happened is I think, you know, the electorate and especially some of the conservatives have gotten used to it and just sort of learned to live with it, but also appreciate that it's working. You know, and the fact that, you know, this president he operates differently, you know, and it's embarrassing sometimes, but, you know, it actually works because, you know, it's one of the reasons that he got elected is that he is different. He's candid. He tells you what he's thinking. He doesn't really play the political diplomatic game the way that, you know, traditional politicians have. And I think people are just frustrated with, you know, and the same reason, you know, a lot of voters in Britain that are, you know, pro Brexit, you know, didn't really appreciate when the elite or the establishment, you know, looked down on them and said, oh, that's just those stupid people voting for Brexit. You know, it's just there's a certain, you know, elitism that's permeated the permanent political class, and I think voters are just really frustrated with it. So
I do think there's an element of truth in that, actually, in terms of the elite, as you put it, and I think that takes various different guises. I think there is just an attitude that anybody who doesn't think exactly the same way about them must be some kind of idiot, and I think that galvanised a lot of the Brexit vote. People don't like to be told they're stupid. People don't like to be told you're allowed to have views, and actually I happen to think that a lot of the views on the left are pretty stupid. But anyway, I'm quite keen to get the view of a real life American about how do you view Britain? How do you view your relationship with us? What is your actual take on us as a nation and as a group of people?
Yeah, that's what's interesting. I think there should be great optimism, and I think the silver lining of this whole thing is there should be a lot of optimism, and the relationship is long and and will survive all these little bumps like this. And so I think what you have to look to, I mean, look at Woody Johnson, who's a great, really a great guy. He's been very successful. He's doing a great job as ambassador. And it's because he, you know, he's very pro, obviously, you know, pro-American and very pro-Trump. That's important. But he's also pro-UK. You know, he really loves his job and he loves the UK. So he's doing a great job. I think the silver lining here is this will be an opportunity for the UK to put someone in that seat who not only works in the best interest of the UK, but also loves America and at least can appreciate this president and communicate and understand that there's a reason that the electorate voted for him. You know, and just appreciate that and understand that there's such a great opportunity here to first of all to do a trade deal, which I know everybody talks about, but you know, but even without that, you know, there's just look, the countries already, you know, are rank one or two with each other in terms of both trade as well as foreign direct investment. You know, so we've already demonstrated to each other that, you know, we're the biggest investors in each other's countries.
Brilliant.
So, you know, look, there's great optimism, great opportunity here. And I think if the permanent, you know, permanent political class and the diplomatic circles and even the media can just understand, you know, that there's diversity of thought is a good thing. You know, that for the progressive left who are obsessed with identity groups and inclusiveness and diversity, but yet no tolerance for diversity of thought, you know, that's really holding everybody back.
Okay,
so
good.
If there, you know, there's a great opportunity here between the two countries.
Love sports.
I'm quite excited for what we've got coming up right now, actually, with regards to Super Frankie Lampard and Chelsea.
Yes, indeed. We're going to be talking about their young players, aren't we?
We are, right, because obviously, look, a lot's being made of Frank Lampard's arrival at Chelsea. He had his first pre-season game yesterday. They're on a tour of Ireland. They played against a team called Bohemians, who are, they're all right for Irish Football League. And they drew 1-1. A late equaliser from Bohemians scuppered Frank Lampard's first victory in charge. The Chelsea fans were jokingly singing, "You're getting sacked in the morning," from the stands, which Frank Lampard joined in. I actually thought that was brilliant. Like, you must know as a manager that you're just completely settled after that. You're safe, innit? Because like they're joking about the fact that you're going to get
sacked. They're joking. Yeah. He's joking. It's all fun. Then we look on the screen and Frank Lampard has been sacked. The thing is, it wouldn't surprise you.
Yeah, exactly. But look, they've got this two-window transfer ban. Now, a lot has been made of that because, of course, they've lost players like Eden Hazard and they're going to struggle to bring players in because they're not allowed to. So, the young players who are potentially going to be given their chance at Chelsea this season, these breakthrough stars. So last year, no one had really heard of Callum Hudson-Odoi. Mm-hmm. He plays a couple of games. Suddenly, Bayern Munich are all in for him. He's value him at 50 million quid, etc., etc. So now we're going to have a look at some of the youngsters who might break through.
Let's do that. Go on then. Who you got?
Well, we've got Fikayo Tomori. He's a defender. He spent last season on loan with Lampard at Derby and earned two Player of the Season awards.
Yeah, so Tomori and, of course, Mason Mount. I'm sure you'll bring him up very shortly. The fact that they've worked with Lampard already, it puts them in prime position. They're going to be delighted that this has worked out in the way that it has, because they did so well last season. Mm. And now that he has got the gig, of course, you'd think they're going to get an opportunity sooner rather than later. You touched on Hudson-Odoi, and this is the bit that really excites me about this season, not just for Chelsea, but also for England, given that a lot of the young players are English, and given that they are going to be playing top-end Premier League football at a young age, even if they're not quite ready just yet. Give it a year, give it 2 years of playing in a Chelsea team. Mm. They're going to be key members of the England squad as well as the Chelsea team.
Yeah, exactly. And Tomori started 43 of the 46 league fixtures and all three of the playoff games. So, look, he's got a lot of experience there for a young lad. Fair play. Mason Mount, as you've just said, another successful loan spell at Derby. Called up for England under-21s international. He also had a very, very good stint out on loan at Vitesse Arnhem. So he's, again, quite well experienced in that respect.
He is.
He scored 11 goals and got 6 assists last season.
He's brilliant. He was one that, and I know that as soon as the season finished, a load of Championship clubs inquired to see if they could loan him again for this season, and Chelsea said no. He was, if he didn't stay with Chelsea, which he will do now, he'll stay there and no doubt fight for his place, he would have gone on loan, low-end Premier League, sorry. So, you know, again...
Was there anywhere in particular that was quite interested in him? Any club?
In the Championship, everyone. Literally, seriously. Everyone would have taken him in a heartbeat, but Chelsea made it clear, no, he's now ready for the... And this is what Chelsea do, and they've done really well over the years, is that effectively the players go up league by league. You'll see it quite often where there's a young goalkeeper, Nathan Baxter, who's now going to play Scottish Premier this year. He was Conference, then he was League Two, still only 20 years old. And I think they do it right in that... For me, as a young player, you could stay and play under 23 football, which, to be honest, I played in my last year at Brentford, and it was walking pace, useless as far as... Technically, it's very, very good. You can watch it, but there's no real passion in it. It is just a training game. So for me, get yourself out on loan, even if it's League 2, League 1, Championship, fantastic. And then eventually, if you're good enough for the Premier League, Lo saw Loftus-Cheek, he went to Crystal Palace for that season. Get yourself a mid to low Premier League team and then come and fight for your place at Chelsea. Now, if you don't get in at Chelsea, what happens? You get moved on for several million pounds and you still have a Championship career or a Premier League career. The beauty is this season is a lot will be propelled into that Chelsea team that wouldn't have had they not have had this transfer ban.
Exactly. Tammy Abraham is one of them, because Chelsea do have some serious concerns when it comes to their strike force. Alvaro Morata, is looking to make his loan to Atletico Madrid permanent. Gonzalo Higuain is heading back to Juventus. In fact, West Ham inquired about him today. And Olivia Giroud just scored just twice in the Premier League. He's like the anti-goal, isn't he, that guy? So Tammy Abraham's
got a chance
to the fore. He's been successful the whole time. He enjoyed a successful loan spell at Aston Villa last term. Scored 25 goals in 37 games in the Championship.
He's one of them where I hope he hits the ground running, because there's a lot of players like that, of that kind of mould, where you do wonder, have they got the quality, have they got the ability to step up and play at the top end Premier League? And it might be one of them that 10, 15 games in, he hasn't scored, it hasn't quite worked out for him. He's still worth a lot of money and he'll still have a Premier League career. The question is, can he have a career at Chelsea? He could be the type that if he hits the ground running next season, all of a sudden we're going crazy about him, in the same way that we did about Hudson-Odoi, but maybe Hudson-Odoi and a bit more. Certainly if he's got the goals in him, which he has, and he's shown it.
Yeah, I'm not going to go on about Hudson-Odoi now, just because everyone already knows who he is. Reece James. So he was behind fellow 2018 and 19 loanees, Tomori, Mount and Abraham. Reece James is the next in line for a shot at Chelsea's first team after a stellar season with Wigan. He's named, actually, in the Championship Team of the Year. So it started 44 or 46 league games last season. And they've got such an embarrassment of riches at Chelsea.
He was the best right back in the Championship last season. Quite a versatile player as well. Can play in different positions. Again, every Championship club have inquired about Reece James on the back of last season. Chelsea have said no, as it stands. So, again, I expect him to come back and compete. We have to remember, though, Chelsea do still have the nucleus of the squad from last season. Yes, they've lost Hazard, and yes, they'll lose one or two others. But, of course, they still have the nucleus of that squad. So a lot of these players will initially be fringe players, but certainly he will get a chance. He's very, very good.
Yeah, absolutely. And just want to round all this off, somebody who I think will be quite known, arguably more for his hair than his football at this stage in his career, but Ethan Ampadu. Yeah. He looked sensational at times last season and made his debut for Wales as well. Very, very quick, very good on the ball, very composed actually with the ball at his feet.
Yeah, well, you've just named five or six players there that if, and I love to see how this season plays out, if Chelsea can maintain a position in the top four and if five or six of those players you touched on there are in the starting lineup come the end of the season, this bodes well. I know you mentioned he's Welsh, but it bodes well for Chelsea, for the England team in a few examples there.
Yeah, well, we'll find out that he's got an English grandfather or something like that.
We'll find a way of...
We'll just do it.
Even though he's made his debut, we'll find a way of making him. We do it. We do it really well.
Rules are there to be broken. Just look at the way we've done it in cricket, in rugby, all sorts of stuff. Tennis. Yeah.
We'll claim him.
We'll happily... Come on in. Come on in, absolutely. No, but look, I think Chelsea this year, and the reason I wanted to do that is because, look, Frank Lampard is just taking his first game in charge. He's going to be working with a lot of these youngsters, and I think it actually could be a really exciting season, not just for Chelsea, but look, I'm a Manchester United fan, and I am going to enjoy watching Chelsea this season, especially if they are bringing through these youngsters. I am enjoying watching a Premier League game where, you know, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, United legend, is blooding a lot of these United youngsters. We're going to have a look at them later on, by the way. And in his opposite dugout there is Frank Lampard, blooding a load of Chelsea youngsters. What a game of football that's going
to
be.
There is, as well, the connection between the fans and players. And naturally, we go back to the United class of 92 quite often. But, of course, there was a reason that team was so... well-liked, obviously by Man United fans more than any, but there's a reason they were so well-liked, because they were local lads that have done good. And there was that feeling of, you are a Manchester United player, you're a Manchester United fan, in the case of the majority of those players that came through. It's the same here with Chelsea, and I think they will gain a lot of affection for that fact.
Yeah, 100%. I don't want to jinx this, but I'm predicting good things for Frank Lampard. I almost think league position is irrelevant this year. Pretty much entirely. Just, you know, top half, obviously. You know, look to get as close to fifth or seventh as you possibly can. But realistically, if you finish ninth or tenth, to be honest, given the fact that you've just been, you know, playing this bunch of kids, and that they've made their debuts and that they are now becoming solid Premier League players, I think that bodes really well for Chelsea going forward.
And given that they got the amount they did for Hazard, if it's this time next year, they won't have spent any money. It could be a case that they give him a transfer budget of 200, 250 million, which if that
is... You just drop Neymar into that group of talented youngsters, for example.
Good example.
This is Love Sport.
Now, what comes with being a successful athlete? Success, trophies, and a study has recently suggested they are more attractive too. Joining us now to discuss this is Dr. Pam Spurr. Good morning, Dr. Pam.
Oh, good morning, guys.
Good morning. So this study has suggested that successful athletes are more attractive than their less successful counterparts. Why is that the case?
Well, this is really a fascinating study, and this is a scientific study as opposed to someone just doing a commercial survey for some product they want to sell, you know. So it actually is a valid study, and it shows how we pick up, as women, imperceptible clues about a man's sporting prowess and translate that into attractiveness. Because women in this study were shown pictures of biathletes, who, you know, which is a really rigorous competition, and they didn't know how successful these biathletes had been at the sport. So they looked at them, and they were asked to rate them on their attractiveness. And they rated the men who were actually successful at the sport as more attractive without even knowing that they had been a success. So women are picking up imperceptible clues about someone's physique, you know, that they can see the finely tuned muscles and all that, and really discreet clues, because all these men were athletes, just some were more successful. And so women are then judging the men that they can tell are highly athletic as more attractive, because we look for someone who's strong, who's got that hunter-gatherer thing about them, as a potential mating partner.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. One of my buttons just popped off my shirt. Sorry. My bad.
Is it those pecs?
I was just tense.
Can you two stop it, please? We've got a radio show to do.
Do you know, on a serious note, and
I won't
name the lad's name, but there was a player that
Gary.
I knew. We'll just call him Dave. No, in fact, we'll call him Mr. No, we won't. There's a guy that I knew, and he had a hair. This isn't me. I did have my hair done, but this guy had his hair done. Right. Now, he suddenly had his hair done. The next season, he was phenomenal. And we kind of joked between us that actually the fact that he had a bit more self-confidence in his appearance, he also played that little bit better.
Yeah, Gareth Bale had his ears pinned back. Seriously, this is true. His ears pinned back on the season that he broke through. There's something about physical confidence, isn't there, Dr. Pam?
Well, absolutely. If there's one particular aspect that you are concerned about, like hair loss or your ears or something, then, you know, getting those things tweaked can often lead to that confidence growing. And then when you're feeling confident, you have that self-belief. Research shows that in sports, if you have a positive mental attitude, it literally increases your abilities by 10%. Now, you know, what's really interesting is, though, attractiveness can go against you, because some people say, because of their looks, people don't approach them. So if they're single and they're looking for love, then they say, you know, like, the women won't come up to me, or guys won't come up to me. And so in a way, it can be a double-edged sword if you're attractive and say you're looking for love, because a lot of people just think, oh, they're out of my league, I have no chance, so I won't approach them.
Yeah, I had something similar to that, actually, Dr. Pam. It was quite a crushing moment, right? Where I was at a bar and everything, and I started getting quite a lot of female attention. I couldn't really figure out why, and I'd gone outside with one of them, and she informed me that it's because I'm, quote, not a threat.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting If a woman is in the middle of her cycle, her monthly cycle, and she and her biological urge is to procreate, she will look for the stronger male. Research shows that kind of alpha male, because deep in our biology, it tells us that we're more likely to have a healthy child. But outside of that cycle, they'll look for a more softer, gentler beta male. And maybe, Patrick, you're a bit of a beta, I don't know, or beta. Some people say beta, whatever it is, as opposed to alpha. And so then they find beta male more compatible because they are less likely to cheat on them.
Yeah.
So it really depends what a woman is looking for.
For what it's worth, if I could use one word to describe Patrick, it would be cuddly.
Oh, yeah. Cuddly with an edge. He's got that edginess, hasn't he? He's got a little bit of alpha in there.
Yeah. Is it the same for both genders?
No. Well, with this study, the one we originally were talking about, when men were shown the pictures of the female athletes, they did not judge a woman to be more attractive depending on her success as an athlete. So it was really interesting. So men were not quite as judgmental about looks when it came to judging who they felt was the most attractive athlete. So they've judged a female athlete who wasn't that successful as being the most attractive.
Yeah, there's definitely something in this, because I can remember at the 2010 general election when they went out onto the streets and they basically had a picture of David Cameron, Gordon Brown and Nick Clegg. And they were like, right, who do you think is going to be our best prime minister? And most people went for Nick Clegg because he was the better looking out of all of them. And so there is definitely something in this. But isn't there a case to be said that successful sports stars are naturally going to be better looking because they're very, very physically fit? They've got no body fat and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they do have an edge, definitely. Someone who's sporty, someone who looks after themselves will have that kind of edge because, again, our unconscious mind tells us we want someone to be with someone who we could potentially have children with. And so we look for that. And, you know, it's really interesting. When we judge faces, the more symmetrical a face, so the more even your features are, the more attractive you're judged. Because way back in the time when we were sort of, our ancestors were hunting across the plains, we judge people with less symmetrical faces to be more disease-ridden.
Right.
So the more symmetrical and even your features are, the more attractive you're judged for health reasons, because you think, if I have an offspring with them, they'll be a healthy offspring.
That's fascinating. Do you know, I could carry this on all day, but I'm being told I'm not allowed.
No, absolutely not.
Well, look, Dr. Get her off. Get her off. Your producer's screaming in your ear. I know it.
Dr. Pounsper, as always, an absolute delight to have you on. Thank you very much.
Love sports.
What's today's subject, Patrick?
Yeah, so Manchester United and Arsenal target Mario Lemina has basically shown that he wants to leave Southampton by posting his own compilation video online, right? So he's got whoever it is, a video team or just one of his mates probably, to put together basically a highlight reel of all his best bits, which he's stuck out on Twitter. Underneath that, he's written, "I know what I can reach and I will fight for it." Two lightning bolts and then a hashtag tonic like lemonade. Yeah. Anyway, it got me thinking about self-promotion with football players and, you know, a little bit of self-PR in the way that you can brand yourself to make you more attractive to clubs. Because I know that we talk about people having, you know, management teams and things like that, but actually some players can do it themselves. In the case of Sadio Barahino, you can work really, really badly. Is that where you just drive to Stoke or something on a cold Tuesday night, park outside and demand a transfer? But in this case, Lemina has done it rather well. It is a good compilation video. He's obviously showing off what he's got to offer. But Rich, is this something that you think you're going to see more commonly in the game?
I think self-promotion is important. I think it's important that you're quite subtle about it. You know, yes, I've got a degree in media and journalism. Yes, I've written a book. Yes, I've played in the Premier League. Yes, you know, I know everything there is to know about goalkeeping. Yes, I am available. You know, but you don't want
bar mitzvahs and weddings.
And yes, you can get in touch on email, I think self-promotion, if you do it cleverly, I think it is important. Do you know what? A good example for those that haven't seen him, Dean Henderson, goalkeeper at Manchester United, who is likely, if it's not done already, to go back on loan to Sheffield United in the Premier League. good example, because he'll always finish off every single post with soon on top, which is the little emoji things saying soon on top. But then it has been picked up, and a lot of people now, they expect it to be on every post. And obviously he's had success after success, and it does generate a little bit more traction. And what often happens, certainly in football, is that you can have good game after good game after good game. Now, people aren't focusing just on you. They're focusing on the team. They're focusing on the game. So a lot of the time, your good performances can go unnoticed. So naturally, you want to let people know that you're doing well. You want to make sure that if you are doing well, it is being highlighted, it is being picked up. And the easiest way is self-promotion, but it's so tricky to do it without maybe coming across as arrogant, as overconfident.
Yeah, I mean, Owen Hargreaves did it and did it quite well when he was at Manchester United. I mean, he had an injury-plagued career anyway. He started his career out. His dad was in the armed forces. He was a British national, but really started to ply his trade in Germany because that's where his dad's military base was. Did really well there at Bayern Munich and was regarded as one of the most technically gifted midfield players of that English generation. Also, he always scored his penalties, which is what happens if you're raised in Germany, I think. Anyway, so he did it well when he was looking to get out United, and he did just a compilation video of him basically going through a, quite an intensive training drill. What happened? City come in for him, and he earns a nice little wedge to end his career. So it can be done very well, but isn't it a bit tricky, as you said, Rich, because surely you are just advertising the fact that you want to move when you do these kind of things.
Yeah, and also just generally, this isn't just football, this is business in general, is that if you're shouting about yourself, that will have an impact to an extent. The best form of advertising is somebody else shouting about you. You know, so look, for all the great things we've done here on Love Sport and the way in which we've progressed, when we've had all the plaudits from third parties, that's been the most powerful advertising that we've received. Or when people are getting in touch and telling us they enjoy it, that's much more powerful than us outwardly saying we're the best.
Yeah,
we believe we are, but when other people tell us that, that's much more powerful. So that's the same thing with the player. It's getting the third parties to actually talk about the players. It's getting the likes of the Red Tops, the different newspapers, magazines, radio shows talking about players. Paul Pogba does it very, very well, where he's quite careful in what he puts out, but he's got a lot of people talking about him. He's being linked to top clubs almost on a daily basis. So his PR is fantastic. So for whatever people think about Mino Raiola, no doubt he's playing a bit of a game behind the scenes to make sure that the publicity is huge around what he does. So it's, again, it's that blend of putting yourself out there as best you can, coming across as reasonably humble while highlighting the good things that you've got going on.
I think more so now than ever in the social media age, it seems to be that players need to create their own brand. You've spoken a bit, Rich, about footballers being like a small personal business, and the branding and the kind of image that you portray of yourself to the world obviously is more important than ever. So Jesse Lingard's Instagram video of him wandering around his hotel room in Miami, that went down terribly. But you look at what Raheem Sterling did and the way he positioned himself in the racism debates that were going on last season, he now has emerged of that smelling of roses, hasn't he? So is that something that you get told to do by a management team or that you pose to the management team yourself? How does it really work?
It can be both ways. I think Jesse Lingard on the whole has done it very well. I think, like you say, a couple have backfired, but there's also the argument that, you know, all press is good press. And a lot of people would say that. The fact that we were talking about Jesse Lingard for 2-3 days on the back of that video, again, brings him to the forefront of our mind. And you end up looking at a lot of the positives he does. So some could argue that actually that worked out exactly as he intended for it to. I personally don't think it did for other reasons. But you're right. I think if you position yourself quite carefully and you're putting out the right content, especially in this day and age, there's been no time like this in the history of mankind where you've got the ability to put stuff out on social media that will instantly be seen by millions of people. Every time Jesse Lingard puts out a video, he will have 100,000 plus views on that video. You can, you know, you just think, and it's free. Like, no one's ever had the opportunity to do this. And this is where management companies are becoming more and more important to help guide players. We've touched on Raheem Sterling. Now, I don't want to do a disservice to Raheem Sterling, but my guess is that what's been going out over the last year hasn't all been his ideas. I'm sure that people behind the scenes have been pointing out to him that, look, Raheem, you're not getting treated fairly. You think of some of the things that have been put in the papers about you. Well, look, here's an example. Two exact stories that have been looked at completely differently, which we saw he put out. Brilliant. And that's given him that edge as well. And since then, of course, we're now focusing so much more, we as a collective, on his performances on the field, which have been brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when you look at James Milner as well, someone that this image of boring James Milner. Now, we don't know James Milner. He might be great at parties, right? He might be fantastic. He might be a dynamic comedy act in the dressing room. We don't know, but that's his image, boring James Milner. And we've seen it with quite a few other footballers as well, where you know, the image surrounding them does seem to be, in that sense, quite negative. Do you have to accept, and how hard is it to accept as a footballer, that actually, no matter what you do, some people are just going to hate you?
Possibly. I think the boring...
How did you cope with it?
What, people hating me?
Yeah, people hate the visceral hatred that you used to get shouted at you wherever you went.
I mean, it was difficult. You just embrace it after a period of time. I think James Milner, I think we'll end up embracing this boring James Milner tag, because I think we go back to some of the players that have then transcended football to go into the media career. So Robbie Savage, a good example. You know, he was the... Well, everyone hated Robbie Savage, but it was a bit of a comedy act, wasn't it, when you played against Robbie Savage? He would always get booed, but he played up to it. And that has then led to him then having a similar image as a pundit, where he's a little bit controversial, says silly things, and it's ended up building a career for him post-football. I think James Milner will fill that. He'll go into, whether it's Match of the Day, whether it's working for Sky or radio stations, whatever it is he does, and he'll play that role, and it'll be funny because of it. You know, Andy Murray, recently, his PR has been very, very good. Now, whether he's meant it or not, him playing with Serena has changed the perception of him slightly. So, look, can it be changed? Yes, absolutely it can. Certain players, you mentioned Berahino. I mean, his PR right now is rock bottom. Whether anything's going to change there is unlikely. There's a few others that are in a similar boat. If it is to change, they're going to need quality management, know what to put out at the right time, be able to pick up on subjects that are trending, what is going on at the moment, how can you get involved in what's going on at the moment and actually put something forward that is well thought out, that can add credibility to your profile. But it is a job. It does need someone that is intelligent and understands this arena.
Isn't the main thing with any of these posts to show quite a high level of self-confidence and a drive? I think that, so when I looked at what Lamina has said there on Twitter, this is a Southampton midfielder who Manchester United and Arsenal are rumoured to be coming in for, as well as a couple of other clubs as well. Now, he's somebody who didn't make great waves last season, but what he's done in this post is basically the words that he's put underneath it are basically saying, look, I am ready to work very, very, very hard to achieve my full potential. Here's what he said. I know what I can reach and I will fight for it. Now, that is exactly what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has been saying he wants in a player. So this is very shrewd.
It could be. Look, time will tell. There's also then this, where it's such a fine art, is that you don't want to then appear desperate. You know, putting out a plea, like, come get me, plea, makes you sound desperate, and that'll put people off. Look, do you know what? It's very similar, and there's some analogies here when it comes to a relationship. You know, if you put it out there that I'm single, I want a girlfriend, da da da, that's not going to attract anybody. So you need to be quite careful as to how you put yourself forward. But if you do it correctly and you add value to yourself and you come across as high value, as real quality, then of course you will attract football clubs. Managers will look and they'll take note and they'll understand, or they'll realise you might be the right fit for them. Using one other good example, actually, just while it comes to mind, is Peter Crouch.
Yes.
Peter Crouch, another great example where he's playing up to the thought of what Peter Crouch is. You know, he had a bit of stick during his career and the fact that he is as tall as he is, and we now see him doing adverts where he's almost taking the mick out of himself. And I think that's another nice quality. Maybe that's a little bit later in your career when you're not taking it as seriously, to be a little bit self-deprecating. I think that can work in your favour because you appear humble, and again, you build an image for yourself which can then help you into whatever your next line of work is.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I mean, Peter Crouch even put on a festival this year, Crouch Fest. Actually did that.
There,
and he's working off this thing of being a bit of a lad, a bit of a joker, the kind of guy that you'd love to go on a stag do with. And that's basically his image.
But then the question would be, if Peter Crouch is 22 and he's doing this, would that be the right image to then build a football career? Maybe not. So it's perfect for him right now. But if you're a young player and you want a move to the likes of a Manchester United, Arsenal, Chelsea, Man City, how do you position yourself? How do you give yourself the most value? What do you put out on the socials? What's being put out in the media to make you seem as attractive as you possibly can be? For me at the moment, Paul Pogba, rightly or wrongly, Mino Raiola's going about it brilliantly. He is being given so much value. Despite not having a particularly good season, we see Paul Pogba as 120 million, 150 million, whatever he's being valued at. And a lot of that is largely down to quality marketing.
Fantastic. Good stuff, Rich. What did you do during your career to market yourself out of interest? You go to a county show?
Do you know what? True story. I actually turned on the Christmas lights in Watford three years running.
Oh, yes! Yes, Rich, get in.
3 years running. The glory days.
Love sports.
There was an interesting story in the paper today regarding the Queen.
Absolutely, yes. This was quite a big deal, actually. The Queen nearly suffered the consequences of an intruder. That's right, an intruder broke into, or scaled the fence outside anyway, Buckingham Palace at about 2 o'clock in the morning. He was accosted by police. He's a 22-year-old man. He's not been named, and it's not believed to be terror-related. But this isn't the first time that something like this has happened. So in 1984, the Queen awoke to find an intruder at the end of her bed. She ended up speaking to him for a few minutes, and obviously the guy was removed. But it's worrying. And what does this say about the level of security being offered to our royal family? Well, on the line to talk about that now is Di Davies, former head of royalty protection at the Metropolitan Police. Di, can you believe that last night happened?
Well, yes, it happens quite often, believe it or not, almost on a weekly basis. Some people try and get in. They have a variety of different rationales why they try and get in. But no, it doesn't surprise me. I'm interested why it took as long as 4 minutes, allegedly, to actually appertain him, because there is fixed posts, as we call them, at the front of the palace. So did somebody have a stopwatch and time it? But he was apprehended. And the truth is that, they're not prisons, they're palaces. And the fences are scalable. You and I possibly couldn't, but a young, fit 22-year-old can get over. Now, how long it took to apprehend him, I don't really know. He didn't get in. So the comparison with 1982 is not fair in that sense. The 82 one was a scandal, and hopefully, certainly in my day, nobody got in for 4 years whilst I was in charge, that's for sure.
Let's get Di back on the case. We need Di back on the case. So obviously, there are concerns from the public. I know that you say, look, they are scalable, absolutely, and you're right, it isn't a prison. But surely, you know, whenever you go to Buckingham Palace, you do see guards everywhere. I mean, this implies that maybe... Because this guy, they're saying it's not terror-related, but it could have been, couldn't it? And then you've had 4 minutes of a potential terrorist wandering around Buckingham Palace.
Well, he was wandering around... Well, allegedly, he was in the front. How he scaled that wall, the fence, without being spotted, I don't know, because obviously there are fixed post policemen there 24/7. There are cameras, there are alarms. I don't know is the truth why it took, if it did take 4 minutes, but he was apprehended. He didn't actually get into the building. And royalty security is layered. And without going into detail, this was the first layer. Yes, it would appear that he got over the fence. How he did that, I've no idea. But he was caught, and he was caught relatively quickly, I think.
Yeah, can you just talk to us as well about what happened in 1982? Because essentially the Queen woke up with an intruder sat on the foot of her bed. Is that right?
Well, he did sit there. The truth that he was there for half an hour chatting is absolute nonsense. I can't go into the detail because it's now an official secret, believe it or not. Even I can't see the follow-up report by Mr. Dello, the then assistant commissioner. But the truth is, he did get in, and it was scandalous. And Willie Whitelaw, the then Home Secretary, offered his resignation. It was a scandal. And matters were allegedly put right. By the time I got there in the 90s, things were a lot better. But even then, I found glaring errors, which I tried to rectify in my time there. And hopefully my predecessors have worked on what I did.
Now, I used to live up in the Lake District, and Prince Charles and Camilla used to visit, not me personally, various sites up and down there. So I kind of got a glimpse of their close protection, and I was very impressed with it all. I mean, there was sheer volume of people that are there, that are making everything safe and watching every movement, which is why I was quite surprised about last night. But just in terms of the kind of protection that is offered, not just to our immediate royals, as it were, the Queen, but to William, to Kate and to Harry and to Meghan, has that increased quite drastically in recent years?
Well, it's a good question. I simply don't know is the honest answer to that, because obviously I'm well gone and an old pensioner now. Right. But seriously, the truth is the risk, it's a continuation of risk given the threat against them. And the threat comes from a wide variety, from terrorists to what we call fixated mentally ill people. and indeed the press themselves, who are constantly, not only the British, but the paparazzi. And we know sometimes the consequence of that over the years. So there's a wide variety of issues that have to be looked at. And then you put the as much as you can, the appropriate resources to protect them. But, you know, the senior royals are, as far as I'm aware and I'm confident, are well protected as much as you can with any one you're protected. There's no 100%, that's for sure.
Fantastic. Di, thank you very, very much for coming on. Di Davies there, former head of royalty protection at the Metropolitan Police. Just discussing the quite shocking news, actually, that last night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, the Queen, well, not the Queen, was approached. Buckingham Palace was approached by a bloke who had scaled the fence. He's in police custody. They don't think it was terror-related. He's just a 22-year-old alleged nuisance.
This is Love Sport.
Well, once again, we're coming towards the end of another one of our shows. And as always, we'd like to finish the show with a section called Winners and Losers. In fact, we've got a theme tune to this now, which I am excited to... No, we don't.
Oh, right.
No, they haven't got around to it.
Just come up with one. What could it be?
I feel like we might need to start taking certain things into our own hands. But yeah, it would be nice to do one for this, because I feel like we could do a really good one.
I think
for winners
so.
And losers. Let's start off, though. I'll start off with a winner today. First and foremost, Daniel Sturridge is a winner. He got his dog back. Of course, his dog was stolen. Put it out on the socials to let people know. Yes. He was a bit upset, of course. But he does have his dog back. It was returned to him. He is very much a winner today.
I've got a winner for today. Ezri Konsa. Aston Villa have announced the official signing of Ezri Konsa from Brentford. The fee is rumoured to be around the £12 million mark, which is pretty good for Brentford, of course. Rich, I mean, look, you've obviously spent some time at Brentford. You know, you know the club quite well. You know their current situation. First and foremost, the player himself, Ezri Konsa, is he any good?
Ezri Konsa is very good, yes. Came from Charlton. Massive leap, actually, within the space of 2 years to find himself in the Premier League. But Brentford have got a habit of bringing quality young players and selling them on for a profit. They've done it over and over. They've done it several times this summer already. There may even be more that leave Brentford this summer. The good news for Brentford is that they will have money to spend, and no doubt if they invest wisely, I'm sure they'll be strong again.
Do you see Brentford challenging for promotion to the Premier League at some point soon, do you reckon? Because, I mean, they've obviously laid some quite solid foundations, haven't they?
They have laid some solid foundations. Obviously, with Ezri Konsa, there is a sell-on fee I must touch on as well that will go back to Charlton, which is, of course, good news for Charlton.
Yes.
This is... it's important for Brentford. The important thing for Brentford now is the next few weeks. They've got 4 weeks left of this window. The fact that they are going to want to compete this season, this Championship League is going to be interesting this season, given that a lot of clubs can't spend money due to FFP. There is an opportunity for Brentford, but so many players moving on, you just worry that much of a reshuffle could be negative.
If Brentford managed to get into the Premier League, yeah, how hard do you reckon it would be for them to stay there?
If they make the Premier League, I think they'd be okay. It'd be difficult given that, of course, Premier League will be a massive leap. Where I think they'd be okay is, of course, they'd have a much bigger budget. So where they're making incredible signings, getting great deals on young players that they're bringing through, their strategy could change somewhat. Now, they have got the new stadium pending as well, which is, for those that drive on the M4, you'll see it's getting there now. It's getting closer and closer. The timing might be perfect if they can get themselves to the Premier League next season. I've no doubt that if they did, that Matt Benham would spend a lot of money. They'd still follow a similar strategy, but with players to level up. So maybe rather than bringing in players for 2s, 3s, 4 millions, you might start seeing them bring in players 8, 9, 10 with the same kind of philosophy that they could sell them for even more.
Yeah, and I mean, surely the fact that Brentford are even in contention and that you've mentioned FFP there is testament to how good off the pitch that they are at Brentford, their structure and their setup.
Their structure is phenomenal, and it has been for a long time, and this is largely credit to Matt Benham. The idea that he's put in place, where he's effectively segmented the club, so you've got every different department running independently, but they come together beautifully. And in fairness, it has been largely successful. Last season was a bit of a disappointment, I would argue, because I thought certainly start of the season they were so bright, I thought they might go on and challenge for promotion. Wasn't meant to be. But now they have an important few weeks ahead. If they get their recruitment right, I think they can be there or thereabouts. But as it currently stands, they have lost some key players. Yes, they've made a lot of money, but they have lost some key players. So the next 4 weeks are crucial for Brentford.
Fantastic. Well, there we are. Good news for Brentford fans going forward, at least.
Indeed. Now, it should be interesting. That does draw us to the end of another fantastic show. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. Thank you, Paris. Thank you, Aaron. Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome.
My name is Richard Lee. You listen to Love Sport.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.